Hi there, it's Ed here with a short message before we start the pod this week. Did you know that our most informed investors get insights, articles and investment ideas from Tom, me and the team sent directly to them via email, and it is completely free. You can join them. Just subscribe at fidelity.co.uk/newsletters.
This week in the markets, investors shrug off political upheavals, earnings season kicks off, and it remains a tale of two stock markets. Politics remains centre stage on both sides of the Atlantic, but investors are taking it all in their stride. The biggest shock of the weekend was the unexpected failure of Marine Le Pen's far-right National Rally Party to win the second leg of France's snap election. Votes and seats were instead divided up in a three-way split between the far-right, hard-left and President Macron's centrist group. Result, gridlock. France is headed towards a hung parliament, an outcome that markets initially disliked, but quite quickly decided was not so bad after all. French stocks gained and the euro was flat. This is not so unusual. Markets typically like it when politicians are denied the power to implement sweeping change. The gap between borrowing costs in France and Germany initially widened slightly from 0.68% to 0.71%, but then they fell back. The yield on French 10-year government bonds was almost unchanged as investors assessed the election to have delivered short-term uncertainty but longer-term stability. The result of the election is more important than the market reaction might suggest, however. France is the Eurozone's second biggest economy and it's now in limbo, with no single bloc anywhere near an outright majority. Also, the replacement of Macron's business-friendly centrist group as the Assembly's largest power bloc by an alliance of communists, socialists and greens is not obviously a positive for markets. Here in the UK, politics has moved in the opposite direction, towards greater stability, with last week's landslide victory for the Labour Party. In reality, the massive majority enjoyed by Labour overstates its popularity because its share of the vote was historically very small and lower than the combined share of the Conservatives and Reform. However, the UK's first-past-the-post electoral system means that Labour ended up with more than 400 seats and the Conservatives little more than 100. Unlike in France, the Labour government has free rein to put its stamp on the UK economy, and new Chancellor Rachel Reeves is already setting out her growth agenda. The market reaction was positive, but muted, the morning after the election. Shares, gilts and the pound all moved modestly higher. The subdued reaction was predictable because the result had been well flagged in the weeks leading up to the vote. No one was surprised. The challenges facing the government, however, look very similar to those troubling the previous government. Too much debt, low productivity, and a divided electorate looking for European-style public services, but US-style taxation. It won't be an easy journey ahead. From an investor's perspective, there are some important sector implications. Market watchers think a Labour government will be good for house builders and infrastructure companies, less good for oil and gas. Banks may be seen as a key part of the growth push. Utilities could face pressure to clean up their act, particularly the water companies. There are also important potential personal finance implications. In particular, Labour has remained coy on its plans for capital gains and inheritance taxes. It carefully didn't rule out increases in these, as it did for the big three of income tax, national insurance and VAT. Also in the spotlight is the tax treatment of pensions, with speculation around some of the pension freedoms being revisited and maybe an increase in the minimum age before people can access their pension savings. The tax treatment of pensions on death and the tax-free lump sum have been described as soft targets for emergency tax rises. Finally, on the political front, it's thought that the next couple of weeks are make or break for Joe Biden, who's facing mounting pressure to step aside after a dismal election debate showing against Donald Trump. If he doesn't stand down soon, the Democrats will no doubt rally around their candidate, but many believe he will struggle to keep Trump from a second term. As is the case over here, there's little long-run linkage between the party that wins an election and subsequent market performance. Indeed, over the 4 years of the presidential term, the balance of power between the White House and Congress, and whether the winner is Democrat or Republican, has made little difference. In all cases, the average annual return has been around 8 to 9%. Over the first 2 years, there can be some variation. A Republican sweep and a Democratic president with a divided Congress have historically been the best options. But in reality, the market is bigger than the man, and so far it has always been a man in the White House. Ultimately, the market is driven by the trajectory of corporate earnings. So it's fitting that the end of this week sees attention shifting back from the politics to the second quarter results season. As usual, a collection of banks, including BNY Mellon, Citigroup, JP Morgan Chase and Wells Fargo, get the ball rolling on Friday. The banks are first out of the blocks, but they're not driving the market at the moment. That remains the prerogative of the tech sector, and in particular, the small handful of market leaders known by a range of monikers, Magnificent Seven, Fab Five, or just plain Nvidia. These stocks continue to leave the rest of the market far behind them. In just 3 months, the Mag 7 has risen by 23 percentage points more than the equal-weighted S&P 500 index. Year to date, the S&P 500, dominated by those companies, has risen by 13 percentage points more than that equal-weighted index. Just 29% of stocks are outperforming the market year on year, which is not surprising. Unless you're one of the top seven shares, it's almost impossible to keep up. A very difficult environment for stock pickers. In terms of valuations, the surge in tech stocks distorts the numbers. Even so, the S&P 500 remains well behind previous bubbles in terms of the average price-to-earnings ratio. Strip out the market leaders and the rest of the market doesn't look too stretched on around 18 times expected earnings. And those earnings are holding up well, as we will no doubt discover over the next few weeks. Expectations are for 9% year-on-year growth in profits, which, if delivered, will keep valuations in check for now. The other big driver of markets in the second half will be the direction of travel for interest rates. And here too, the news is positive, with the latest jobs report showing that excess labour demand is reducing, so easing upward pressure on wages, and with headline inflation falling closer to target, the Fed could soon start to feel more relaxed about giving back some of the interest rate hikes it's piled onto the US economy since 2022. Helping guide that decision-making, the latest CPI data is due on Thursday. The odds on a September rate cut have now risen to 75%. Meanwhile, over here, the Bank of England is closer to pulling the trigger on lower rates now that inflation is back to target at the headline level, even if wages and service sector inflation are both too high for comfort. Retail sales data this week will fill in one more of the data gaps for the bank.
Please be aware the value of investments and the income from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information does not constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Investors should also note that the views expressed may longer be current and may have already been acted upon. Reference to specific securities should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities and is included for the purposes of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you are unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor. This podcast may not be reproduced or circulated without prior permission. It is meant for UK residents and does not constitute an offer or solicitation in any jurisdiction in which it may be unlawful to make such an offer or solicitation. No statements or representations made in this podcast are legally binding on Fidelity or the recipient. Issued by Financial Administration Services Limited, authorised and regulated in the UK by the Financial Conduct Authority. Fidelity, Fidelity International, the Fidelity International logo and F symbol are trademarks of FIL Limited.